Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the September 18th, 2019 Land Use and Development Committee meeting. I am joined by Vice Chair Commissioner Mickey Steinberg and Member Commissioner Ricky Ariola. We have a pretty light agenda today. Any announcements, Mr. Boxner, Mr. Mooney?
Just the deferrals, items 8 through 12 on the agenda are being deferred to some of them. Item 8 is being deferred to the October 30th meeting, and the remainder of the items are all being deferred to the December 2019 meeting.
Okay.
So we're only considering items 1 through 7 today.
All right.
And nothing from the city attorney's office.
Okay. Well, let's get started. We're actually going to begin at the end. We're going to start with item 7. Discussion pertaining to a proposed ordinance to expand prohibited uses along 71st Street and Normandy Drive for package stores, vaping and smoke stores, tattoo parlors, and related uses. This is sponsored by Commissioner Mickey Steinberg.
Thank you. I mean, it's very self-explanatory. As we do these types of legislation throughout the city, we're squeezing the balloon. And so, really, there's nowhere else to go but north. And we already have a handful of these shops. As I think, Tom, you call them nuisance shops?
Nuisance uses.
Nuisance uses. Under our code, I think it's defined as such. And so this is just, you know, while we're in a transitional period, a good chance to really look at that and make sure we're elevating the area and making sure we're moving forward in the right direction. And I wanted to bring it over here as a discussion to test the appetite for doing such a thing. It's not that drastic of an ordinance change that would come to that area, but I think it would improve it immensely. There will still be tattoo shops because there are, you know, probably three that are grandfathered in. There's, I can tell you of at least one smoke shop that I know of that's there, if not two. So there's check cashing stores already there. So it's not that they're not going to be there, but we're hoping not to have more of them.
Yeah, I'm in 100% agreement. As you know, I've sponsored this legislation in the Ocean Drive MXC district. It's a shame that we didn't do this 20 years ago, but you know, we're catching up now, and I think this is vital for the renovation, renaissance of North Beach. So I fully support it. Thank you for bringing it.
I would just like to add
your
that
name
there
for the record,
is
please.
Hi, Matisse Cohen. Good morning. I think that possibly this should be attached with another ordinance going along with it, and that is the facelift. Well, we find that the smoke shops and these nuisance operators are in the community. It's normally the type of business that needs the least amount of investment in the property. So you can open up a smoke shop in any vacant store and have very, very minimal investment and just start operating. And if you look at the storefronts in Normandy Isle, for example, which we have three right now smoke shops, you'll see the amount of investment done in to open that business is so minimal that it looks as if it's a vacant store, but yet it's attracting the type of business and affects the surrounding area. So the shops that we do have should have some kind of there should be some kind of improvement that has to be made on the facade part of the business of the street. And I believe that Bo is working on a facelifting incentives, but it should be tied in, because if we're going to be stuck with those three, we're actually creating for them a reason to be there forever, because nobody else can come to the business. So there's no competition. We created a monopoly for those stores, and we're going to be stuck with them forever like that. And I don't think that's the intention of this ordinance.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Jamie Strauss, resident of Normandy. Yes, I agree. This would be very helpful for our neighborhood. It is proliferating pretty quickly, and to put a stop on it now, and you know, we want these are really limited use kind of shopping. It's not necessarily you're going to go and then walk around in the area. It's kind of go get whatever you need and then leave for a lot of these businesses. And I think, you know, Mathis actually said something that was really important, that a lot of these are the ones that have code compliance issues. Not saying necessarily them, because there's other ones in the neighborhood. You know, let's say with their signage, they put up like a plastic banner that's not code compliant. You know, it also falls on the landlord of, you know, if they allow these tenants into their spaces, you know, they should also, besides the tenant being responsible of making sure their signage and everything is code compliant, the landlord should also be on top of them, making sure the buildings are stayed clean, that their signage is correct, because all that lowers the quality of the neighborhood, you know, with all these banner signs and signs and windows and stuff that gets enforced in other places in the city, but not mm-hmm. in North Beach.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you, Jamie.
So when I had a gender review, I was asking Mr. Boxner, Mr. Mooney about, you know, these nuisance uses. We can't prohibit them citywide. So what I'm struggling with is, since we can't prohibit them citywide, we also don't want to squeeze the balloon out of the highest commercial area into something that's, you know, lower density commercial, where it's maybe closer to residential. That's also not what we're trying to accomplish. So what's the right way to do this, whether it's a cap, whether it's distance separation, same type of store, or what do you recommend?
May I ask a question of our city attorney? I mean, can we ban this in our city? I mean, I don't think these things exist in Palm Beach, for example. I think we have more latitude than we might think.
No, we could legally prohibit it within this specific area, and we've done that before with other examples. I believe we prohibited
it. Your question was citywide, wasn't it, Commissioner Ariola?
Yeah, citywide.
Citywide, can we ban it? That may be a little bit more problematic to uphold if there's a challenge. That's the one issue that we're always mindful of, because we have to have a legitimate basis by which in order to ban it on a citywide level, we would have to have something that would support making that type of determination in our ordinance. And a citywide ban is usually problematic where it is not necessarily upheld. Would we defend it? Absolutely, as long as we establish the appropriate record as to why we're doing that.
I mean, for the public health and welfare, right? I mean, we can ban, and we have banned strip joints, right? We have, I think, one in the city, and that was grandfathered in. But you can ban certain things. And with vaping now potentially being federally prohibited, are there categories which we can deem a hazard to the public health hazard, and can we ban it there?
So, and you mentioned strip clubs. And strip clubs, while there is First Amendment protections, they don't normally enjoy the same First Amendment protections that some other potential uses. So every use that we ultimately contemplate and we prohibit has certain different protections, and that's something that we would explore. And if it is the will of the City Commission to prohibited, we would then make an evaluation and provide you the best course of action, whether it will be defensible and in order to support that is a threat to the public's health, safety, and welfare, thereby solidifying the reason for it to be prohibited citywide.
Commissioner Arioli, I have a very simple suggestion. In North Beach, in the town center code, we prohibited check cashing. Stores. We prohibited a number of different uses, and if you add smoke shops to the COP process, that would elevate the bar for somebody to open up a stop immediately, because all of a sudden now he'll be subject to everybody else's requirements of paying $2,500 just to get to the board, right? Getting a permit. That's about a $15,000 cost just to open it up, and all of a sudden, immediately put it on a CUP, and you don't have to ban it, First Amendment, all of those other issues, and you don't have to necessarily guard. Somebody who's already operating is under the CUP law. If there's a problem, a nuisance to the community, and they're having a problem, they'll have to come in front of the planning board and prove their case.
It's a good idea. Question, a thought, we don't have to answer it now, but maybe you can come back to us, Tom and Bo, is to answer Commissioner Aleman's question about, you know, sort of how do we do this and what guidance, you know, do we want to have so that, you know, we restrict this in reasonable areas and not put ourselves in sort of legal jeopardy by having outright bans. Now, could a guideline be in areas where there's significant public investment, so Lincoln Road, Española Way, Normandy Fountain Plaza, you know, can we be more restrictive there and use that as a guidance for us? So I'm thinking, for example, the Normandy Plaza, where we're putting a lot of time and money and effort, The unfortunate part is there's already a couple retailers there that are not conducive to that investment, such as a bank, you know, which we all love banks, but they close at 3, 4 in the afternoon, and we can't use the plaza at night because they're the major tenant there. And then we have a check cashing store, which is also a daytime use. So, you know, moving forward, let's start thinking about areas where we anticipate making significant public investment for public spaces and being maybe restricted to certain types of retail use there.
What I would say mm-hmm. is, as far as the TC Center area, the TCC, I think there, if we wanted to add just, because we already do prohibit some of these things, add the vape shops and the, whatever else would capture that as a CUP process or whatever we're doing now for Town Center, that's fine. But for the rest of Normandy, I almost feel like we did it for 41st Street. We did it for other areas. Last Beach is always last to get these types of improvements and enhancements. And so I feel that I would rather move forward, you know, if we want to exclude the TCC area and just add that as the suggested CUP, and then actually look at it citywide as a CUP option, that they can travel in tandem and we can see where it goes. But I do feel that, you know, the community that I've spoken to up there is really excited about finally, like, us saying, you know, we're going to put some restrictions on some of the uses because we want to encourage. And I think that's also going to go to the other ordinance that one of us will probably pick up and work on with the, I guess we can call it the facelift ordinance of encouraging these landlords, because we can only do so much as government. If the landlords aren't willing to meet us halfway, it's all for nothing, really. Mm-hmm. So that's where I'm at.
Let me make sure I understood that. So you're interested in the potential of a new CUP process for nuisance uses on a citywide basis.
To explore that.
And that could come back
here to land use? Yeah. It should come back to land use so we can understand that.
You're interested in a facelift program, and that can come back.
I guess Bo is working on something.
Are you working on something, Bo Martinez?
It's something that we're exploring. In my previous job, we actually had a visual improvement program. So it provided incentives for facade as well as tenant improvements, and it was dollar-to-dollar match. And so we seeded it, and there's a whole program behind it, but I think it's something that we can definitely entertain here.
We can explore that.
Yes.
Okay.
And in terms of item 71, you want planning to draft an ordinance?
To bring it to commission. First reading, and if we need to make any other changes, you know, we'll have between first and second to do that.
Okay. You all right with that?
Yep.
For sure? Okay.
For number 7, the ordinance, because it's an LDR ordinance, would need to be referred to Planning Board. So we can bring it to Commission October 16th
okay.
as a C4 to refer to Planning Board, and it will come back to the Commission for first reading in December or January.
That's fine, and it gives us time to fully...
Now, for 71st Street, just to clarify, in the TCC area, the only outright prohibited use are pawn shops. So there's nothing in TCC that prohibits vape or these other nuisance uses.
Mm,
so
you should treat them the same, right?
Yeah,
treat them the same.
So we're gonna address right. both the TCC and the CD2 along 71st Street, Normandy Drive, along the lines of what you were talking about
yeah.
in the memo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, by acclamation.
And just one other clarity. In terms of the CUP, Tom, would it be advantageous to do a distance separation in conjunction with the CUP? Would that constrict the...
Yes, I think that if you were going to permit them...
Thank you, Alex.
Now, in terms of the ordinance, do you want the ordinance to be an outright prohibition in those corridors? Or do you want it to be a CUP? Do you want it to be an outright prohibition in those corridors? Or do you want there to be the ability to get those uses through the CUP process?
No, I think in those areas that we just discussed today, that should be a prohibition, just like on 41st Street and some other areas, so we don't start seeing a proliferation. And I know the CUP process is going to make it much more difficult, but I think in the areas that Commissioner Alamon is concerned about that it could creep into, that's where I think we should look at it.
Okay.
What do you think?
I'm okay with it.
Okay,
so the ordinance that we'll bring back for referral will be for the prohibition on 71st Street. In the CD2 and TCC area.
Right.
Okay.
And then we'll have a separate item that you bring to explore CUP.
And
separately in the other areas.
Do you want that to come back to
land use?
To land use in October?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. Any reason? Any reason you just doing just 71st Street, or you just want to start with
it's
that?
71st Normandy. It's a CD2 and the TCC, right? You want to expand it? Is that why?
I'm always aggressive. If you want to start with that, it's fine.
We're in a transitional period now, so this is the time to do it, so that when everything starts coming online, we have all of that in place so that we incentivize.
Because I think that's sufficiently large, and then the other large commercial area right now is controlled by the Ocean Terrace developer, and I don't think he's going to be opening smoke shops there.
And they have prohibitions.
Tom, is it helpful to you to refer a discussion to the planning board of implementing CUP for nuisance uses so that if they have any...
I think at this point it's probably premature, because I think that if that we end up doing that, then maybe we can get their feedback. Maybe we bring that back to land use for further discussion.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, let's do that. All right, that concludes item 7. Thank you, Commissioner Steinberg. That's by acclamation.
Okay.
And so now we are going to do item 5, Commissioner Arriola. This is, or Vice Mayor Arriola. Discussion regarding development incentives for the Normandy Isle Commercial District, a related topic.
Want to lead us on this? I think Bo will kick us off if you want to tell us what you've been working on here. What I'd like to do is just get our staff working together with landlords and stakeholders in that area. So I don't know. I think you've been having some of those meetings already.
Thank you, Vice Mayor Arriola. Bo Martinez, Director of Economic Development. We've had some initial conversations with some property owners in the area on what would help them redevelop or encourage them to redevelop their properties. And some of the items that have come up through the discussion is reduce parking requirements and let the developer determine the adequate number of parking spaces for the project. As part of that process, I also reached out to the parking department and to look at the utilization rate for on-street paid parking as well as parking lots, city-owned parking lots. And what they're telling me is that the utilization rates have continued to drop and trend downward over the past 4 years within the area, and that has to do a lot with, the ride-sharing programs, Uber, Lyft, as well as people changing their mobility options. Some are walking, some are biking, and choosing other ways of getting to the area. Secondly, the one was to reduce or waive impact fees and permit fees for development, especially for smaller projects. They feel like if they're going to redevelop and if it's going to be a smaller project, it's really not feasible for them once you start adding up all the fees in there for development. The third was enhanced streetscape improvements as outlined in the NOBE plan and the alley activation. And one of those areas that we can definitely do is, improve the streetscape where there's trees, sidewalks, and other types of elements for streetscape. And part of that program could possibly come out of the forthcoming or the proposed community redevelopment area that we're sending to the county. So that could be a program that comes out of that process. Fourth is a facade and tenant improvement program, as we mentioned earlier, and definitely exploring that as an option. I can tell you in my previous positions in different cities, we did have a facade improvement program, and it was typically a forgivable loan/grant program, and it was a one-to-one match for businesses with a cap. So that's something that we can definitely explore and something that can come out of a proposed CRA as well. And the fifth is attract more disposable income to the area. And so that's that, by attracting more disposable income, we need to, create opportunities for jobs, higher paying jobs. We need to make sure that we're increasing and improving the housing stock in the area and really just trying to bring people with higher income so they can support the type of retail and restaurants we want in the area. With that, that concludes my presentation.
I have a question for you, Bo. If someone is improving their property, and I'm thinking about the conversation we just had about the facelift project. Are they, without necessarily creating more square footage or changing the use, are they having to pay parking impact?
What was the question again? I'm sorry.
If a property owner is investing in their property, upgrading it along the lines of the facelift conversation, where they're not adding square footage necessarily, they're not bringing in a more intense use, but they're just improving the property, do they have to pay parking impact?
They don't have to pay the parking impact fee if they're not changing the use to a more intense use. So if they're just doing facade improvements and keeping the same use, there wouldn't be any parking impact fee or parking requirement. If they're changing the use to a more intense use, and that generates an increased parking requirement, they would then have the option of paying, establishing an annual fee in lieu.
Okay.
I have a question about, you mentioned the facade improvement, having a fund for that, a grant, and that was done here, 8 years ago, 10 years ago? We had a facade improvement fund. Hmm. And very few, and it was for North Beach specifically, and very few property owners availed themselves of it. I wonder how it can be done to make it more attractive.
I think, you know, we'll just need to continue to go out there and work with the property owners to encourage them to redevelop or improve their properties, and I think it's a lot of communication and outreach that'll help that.
Perhaps that wasn't done before. Thank you.
Yeah, actually, it would be interesting to see if that program existed here, what the details of that program was, what the dollar amounts were, how much was in the grant, what businesses did avail themselves of it, why they did, who didn't. Get all that. That would be interesting to understand moving forward. And I, you know, we may have to go with the carrot and stick approach.
Commissioner Arriola, yeah. The other comment, I mean, I love the, how do you say this street? I don't speak French. Is that right?
That's Maimonides, if that's what you're thinking.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Maimonides.
I can't see it.
The vision of the master plan on Maimonides is, you know, it's wonderful. That parking is heavily used. I wonder if we need to ask staff to really study that parking. Is that parking really used to support the ground floor retail? Is it overflow parking from the residential that's on the other side of the street? Like, who is parking there? Because to realize that vision that's in the master plan, you need to eliminate that parking. And, you know, it's well used, so I wonder what the strategy is to, you know, supplant that parking with other parking somewhere else.
Yeah, can we, we should direct staff, I'm not sure who, whether it's Saul or somebody else, to figure out who's parking there.
It would be Saul. We can take that.
Yeah.
Commissioner Lieben?
Yes, on the previous item, the program that you had years ago when historic preservation first emerged, there is a person hired to get the funding. The funding came through the federal government, I believe, not the state. It was the funds that we use here now, I don't know if we still do because we're not low poverty like we were at that time. So there is a person who is in charge of it. They offered to paint. They got people who were able to paint the front of their stores, just the front, so it would look better. And everyone joined it, and I think it was because they had money attached to it. You can't just press people to paint their stores. So I think if you go back to it, the federal money is probably not there for that anymore, but probably there is another funding element, and that would help places like North Beach for sure. So I don't know if I don't know if Tom knows more about it than I do. He usually does, but you were here at the time, right? Yeah. Okay.
So, reason I brought this up is because, you know, I think we have a wide open canvas right now, and before it gets filled in, you know, I'd like to see if we could have a you know, a thumb on the scale as to what do we want this commercial district to look like. So I think it dovetails nicely with Commissioner Steinberg's recommendation on prohibiting certain types of uses. But, you know, if we have to envision what do we want to try to proactively attract, you know, what might that look like? I know Beau's been out talking to businesses, try to hopefully attract them, find out what, if any, hurdles they may have in coming to North Beach. You know, but, you know, Beau, I know you came from the Denver area, and, you know, Denver, for example, has a well-deserved reputation of having great microbreweries. You know, other communities have, you know, spaces that is, you know, full of galleries. You have other places that are full of, you know, live music at night, Restaurant Row in Coral Gables. You know, how do we put our thumb on the scale so that we start trying to help businesses locate in this area and make it attractive for them to make that investment? Well, yeah, so like I heard you say, no more tattoo parlors. Yeah, because if you're going to open a nice high-end restaurant, you don't want to be next to a tattoo parlor. So there's things we can prohibit, but then what more do we need to do to attract the stuff we want?
Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, all the items that I listed there from what we're hearing from the property owners, and I think, you know, once we've got a great plan in place with the NOBI plan, it's really going out there and marketing and letting people know that, one, we're open for business. This is our vision. This is our plan. We want you to be part of it. So I think, you know, it's a lot of, you know, public-private partnership conversation and activity that needs to happen over many years in order to start seeing revitalization happen within this area. And that's talking with brokers. It's talking with developers, working with property owners, as well as restaurant and retail uses, and looking at how we blend day-night uses for within that area so that way we don't have three or four banks that close, you know, at 5 p.m. and then the rest of the night in the evening is dead. So I think that's going to be very important as we look at that.
A question for you. How, since we've done the town center overlay, how many applications for new residential development do you have in front of you at planning? Do you have a sense of how many residential units that is?
We have, I don't have the specific number of residential units. We have three applications. One just went to DRB yesterday. Another one is going in October. We expect a third to go in November. A fourth, which has received approval as hotel, is contemplating a change of program. That might be coming back. Then you've got the Bobby Finbarb one, which will be coming forward. So there's definitely a spike in that. And then we've had meetings with the developer of Area's previous project between Harding and Abbott, where a new owner potentially wants to come in with a project. They've had pre-application meetings with staff, and that would be residential and mixed use.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that will certainly help, assuming that those projects all come to fruition, which is a big assumption. But to have all those new neighbors to support these the businesses and to show that demand, you know, makes it more attractive for the right kind of businesses to come in.
Yeah. Beau, as you're out proactively looking and talking to property owners and potential, you know, store owners who might want to open in North Beach, come to us with ideas. If they're telling you that there's a particular issue they have or hurdle, let us know. And then to the extent that we don't have marketing materials currently ready to go for you to go hand to, whether it's real estate brokers or businesses, saying, look, we have all these residential applications. We're going to have hundreds, if not thousands, of new residents coming to North Beach. You know, let's proactively do this. And any tools we can provide to you, whether it's legislative, marketing, money, whatever, let us know.
Yeah, and that's something I'll be sharing with the work plan on Friday at the Finance Committee. But that's part of the plan, and I think it's important that you, when you go out and pitch and chase retail and restaurant users, they're going to want to know the story behind it. And one, they want to know that it's predictability and timing. So when they come to the city, they don't want to get caught up in the processes and so on.
The timing is really important because I was even imagining a guide, you know, that we could share with brokers and so forth. But the timing matters because if the retail gets there too early, then they'll die on the vine. That's what we're seeing, for example, with Capri, which is the restaurant that went into the space where Goal was. They've already eliminated lunch because they're having a hard time. So it's like if the retail gets there too early, then they won't survive, you know, waiting until there is actually new residents living in new homes and right. So the timing matters, you're right.
And we also need to look at it from both a local as well as a regional approach. You know, what is it going to draw people from outside of the area to want to come to North Beach and support those businesses
that are there? Are we looking for a new location in North Beach for O Cinema?
Right now, they've moved over to the old City yes. Hall, but as far as a new location, at this point in time, we are not.
I think we should.
Is the Byron Carlisle still in the cone? We can't talk
so I won't
that.
Be able to comment on that, but I'd like to just go back 1 second. When you give direction to staff regarding Maimonides Street, please take in consideration they should speak to Rabbi Hadar, who has moved his circulation from Normandy to Maimonides so that, in fact, there won't be a stop of traffic. So you have to take that into consideration. It's not necessarily only the parking element there, but it's also the circulation. Because right now, they just do a pick-up drop-off there, but direct all the traffic to go around the property to Maimonides to park and come into their parking
Thank
garage.
Thank you. That's good guidance.
So that's on that. And the second thing is, over the last 4 years, touring with the international, national, and local developers, retailers, chains, etc., the first hurdle I've had to get over was, is North Beach its own city, or is it part of Miami Beach? We have this amazing brand called Miami Beach, but yet, for some reason, North Beach has been precluded or excluded from it. And when people still come today, after all of the noise that we've made, they still don't know if we're Miami Beach. And we have to really press upon that, and that has to come from the city. North Beach is a neighborhood in Miami Beach. It is not a separate city. It's not North Miami. It's not North Miami Beach or the number of other north areas. It's Miami Beach. And when this message goes out from the city, it has to be very, very prevalent. Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, I think as part of our marketing materials, too, is Commissioner Aleman's live entertainment ordinance, right? That it's very clear that in North Beach, it's welcome and wanted. You know, right. So we have a lot of incentives on the table now for entrepreneurs who want to open in North Beach that we don't have other parts of the city.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. I was thinking about the Blue Dahlia, and I have not spoken to her. I know that you have. But part of her premise was dining on the first floor, indoor music upstairs. And now, you know, unfortunately, again, timing is everything, and putting the right use in the right part of town is everything, because if she had gone to North Beach, you know, she might still be in business.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, that's a bold statement. I'm not saying that she would be.
Yeah.
But it does give the restaurateurs more to work with, which is really important when they're trying to compete with the excitement of what's happening over in the Wynwood area and Coconut Grove.
And I believe you may have spoken to a microbrewery that was very interested in coming here. Would have been great for us. The ban on live entertainment was a deal killer for them.
Really?
And so they went elsewhere.
Okay. So we've got that. That looks like, I mean, we still have second reading, but it looks like we're going to get that north of 40th. So that gives them more to work with up there.
Yes.
Hey, Jamie Strauss again. It's very exciting to hear this finally start and get Normandy to have attention. You know, I feel like this is my baby. You know, it was incorporated into the master plan, the alley and the area, you know, that I worked with Dover Cole on this. I think everybody kind of got to the same conclusion at the point. Parking is probably the crux of the whole issue. And it's one of the challenges we had at the charrette of trying to figure out solutions, you know, and a simple answer of, well, why don't developers now build up on their, they don't have a lot of land amass to build up, but the solution, the problem is the parking, you know, because apartment uses, office uses all require parking in this parking district. You know, so one of the key things is that really the ball's kind of really, I'd say, in the city's court of that. You all need to start preparing for this. You know, a parking garage needs to be developed in the area to help alleviate if there's going to be any parking reductions or not, or just to help get better retail now. And to say also that there's a reduction in parking, you know, that might be true on a numbers game, but it's not necessarily true in the actual area. You know, because you have consistently uses that have a high demand of parking that do not have parking. Let's take a laundromat, for example.
There's never
so parking. We have cars parking, blocking right. crosswalks, blocking visibility. it's almost impossible to walk around the area because of cars parked everywhere.
Right.
And it's very, very challenging. The other thing is with the streetscapes. I worked on for Surfside with their Harding Avenue renovation, and I've heard it both ways of people. And for people to say that they got better tenants because they did their streetscape improvements is completely not true. The city was playing catch-up. They had new hotels coming in. They had to redo their streetscape, you know, just to play catch-up to the new development that was happening. So the city's at the point where they need to play catch-up. 3 years ago, we started talking with Rodney and staff about bringing in shade trees into Normandy, into the commercial district. The palms we have now is not conducive to retail. It was said this could have gotten done then. It hasn't gotten done. Pedestrian lighting, all basic urban planning requirements that could have started 3 years ago. And the reason why it was not was, oh, we have a plaza project coming soon. We'll do it concurrently with that. It's not happening. So you're going to have one part that's going to be nice. And then, again, it all has to happen concurrently. You know, it has to catch up. We lost, not to say it would have happened 3 years ago right away, but 3 years of growth. You're not getting mature trees. It's a high cost. You know, and this is also, all these sentiments are true for 71st Street and Town Center. I mean, we have to be pressuring. These are all FDOT. These are very complicated improvements that are going to have to go. You know, I've dealt with it in Surfside, and I've noticed, you know, if government cares and lobbies FDOT, it will get done. If not, they don't care. They'll throw you through variance processes, everything. It'll be a nightmare. But we're playing catch-up. You know, these are conversations years ago to happen. We haven't done anything. These developments are going to happen, and then you're going to have to play catch-up doing streetscape improvements. It's going to be a nightmare, and we have a chance to increase all the quality. The facade improvements, I did some projects. Miami Gardens had a project like that where they were giving funding for retail and facade improvements that worked pretty well. The project we did was just paint and storefront replacement, and it was night and day for this, you know, just a standard strip mall improvement. And so they had, I don't know the how it worked or not, you know, so I'd recommend to go look at Miami Gardens to see what project they had from there, you know, and it goes back down to getting mixed use, you know, having more people coming in to service the retail, that again goes into the missing office, apartments, condos for, you know, families. You're going to get in Town Center a lot of the smaller units are to attract young professionals. You know, we're also trying to attract young families onto Normandy, which is happening organically. You know, so all these things have to get done, but we have to start, or it's just never going to happen. We're going to be playing constant catch up. You know, it's nice to have the plaza going, but without everything else.
Commissioner Ariello, why don't you bring us home?
Well, I believe Beau's going to have a very exciting presentation for us on Friday. With some ideas and requests.
Yes, lots of ideas, Vice Mayor, and a lot of support and programs and funding.
Yeah, on Friday you're coming to finance with a bunch of ideas and asks, and we'll take it up then.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
I do want to touch on something Jamie said, and he's right. A lot of places play catch-up, and there's some basic things we can start doing now that we may want to move forward as a land use committee that deals with our purview, which is, you know, we're doing the streetscape, but we can do a little bit more. I mean, we need to make sure that area is clean and the sidewalks are taken care of and lighting and planting of trees, all the things to get it ready for the future. I don't want to play catch-up in 3 years from now, look back and say, look, we missed the opportunity to start some of those things, some of those basic things that I think will help the area improve. And so I don't know how we move maybe that portion starting forward.
Does staff want to come back to us with a definitive plan, give direction to staff, say, hey, you know, over the next 6 months, what can you prioritize to improve streetscape cleanliness, that kind of thing?
Yeah, because they need to see what's in the geobond that's, you know, at their disposal for this area, for example, with trees and
I do think
lighting.
just, you know, not a lot of money, but just the beautification sends a signal to the community, residents that, you know, we're cleaning up the area. You know, okay. It's amazing what a little paint job can do. When are we opening the water tanks, by the way? That's been almost done for a while. I didn't go to ribbon cutting, so I don't think it's done, is it?
I don't know if the
fencing... Is the water tanks done?
I don't know if the fencing is being modified or...
No, but I mean, those are kinds of things. Like, that water tank project is beautiful. I've seen all the pictures. You know, we took something ugly and made it beautiful. Those are the kinds of public works projects that send a signal to the community that we're really trying to freshen up the area. Fresh coat of paint makes a big difference. So if we can instruct staff to identify some areas where we can give it some little TLC, I think we'd be very supportive of that.
Water tanks are just about, could be done really soon, taking down the frontage from Dickens, the fences, or maneuvering the fences so that you can actually see it from the street would be amazing, and earmarking this location and creating a ceremony with the schools around it and the synagogues and the churches around it would be a magnificent way to open up the season to say, hey, there's change coming here.
And right. The painting of the water tanks is one thing, but to specifically address, the fence can't be removed necessarily because you can't have the public accessing that
water
equipment. However, that doesn't mean that the fencing shouldn't be modified in some way, and I don't know that anyone is working on that.
Okay.
You want to direct staff? I'll make a motion that with respect to the water tanks and the fencing around it, last I looked, it was just that, you know, sort of traditional
high green,
you know, fence that you can't see through. You know, do something so that we can highlight the investment we made in beautifying those water tanks.
You okay with that? So,
yeah.
So by acclamation, direction to staff to look at that fencing and figure out a way to make it resonate in a more beautiful way with the water tower.
We can coordinate with the Public Works Department, the CIP Department to see where it's at.
Okay.
Do you want this?
That's sort of motion one. And motion two would be, whether it's directing
come up
Public
with a modification.
Works, just come back with us with a, you know, a reasonable budget. For some shovel-ready street beautification projects.
And do you want us to come back on October 30th with that?
I think that would have been
Yeah, sooner the better.
So that is how we activate the water tanks and open it up so mm-hmm. that way the public could enjoy.
Yes.
The second, the item that...
it's two separate things. One is the water tanks fencing, and two is the
Normandy
Isle Commercial District lighting, trees...
TLC.
You know, TLC stimulus.
All right. October
anything 30. Else? Anything else? And then can we open and continue this discussion then until when, Vice Mayor? Would you like to see this
Our next meeting. We're going to have a meeting on Friday at Finance to talk about some budget priorities that...
Okay.
Bo may have for us, and then we can bring it back to land use.
So
we'll bring this back to you
use.
October 30th at
yes.
land use.
Okay.
Yep, and then we can talk about progress on these points.
Okay.
Perfect.
And that's by acclamation?
Mm-hmm. By acclamation. Thank you all. All right, we will now move to item 6. I believe all of the parties are here that would like to talk about item 6, which is sponsored by Vice Mayor Areola, Development Regulations for Hotels on Lincoln Road.
And... just by way of background, this particular ordinance was approved at first reading at the September 11th City Commission meeting. One of the things that the Commission asked the Land Use Committee to take a look at between first and second reading was a proposal which there appeared to be consensus on to extend the boundaries of the legislation to include the block between Drexel Avenue and Pennsylvania Avenue, but also to look at perhaps modifying the setback requirements for that block due to the fact that that particular block has a lot less depth than most of the other blocks within the overlay. An owner of the property is here to address the committee in that regard.
Good morning, commissioners and staff. I guess I don't need to say anything. Tom just said it all. Thanks, Tom. Stole my thunder. So as Tom said, basically, I represent Rossinella. First, let me introduce myself again. Wayne Pathman Lewis. We're here on behalf of Rossinella Restaurant, and what we're asking is that the proposed ordinance for the development regulations for hotels on Lincoln Road include the street from Drexel to Pennsylvania. As you're aware, and presentation I made at the last commission meeting is that the use for hotels is already permitted, and the height that we're seeking is already permitted, approximately 50 feet. But unfortunately, what we found out when we wanted to add a hotel use is that we'd have to demolish a portion of the building, which obviously makes no economic sense and certainly would not be disruptive to Lincoln Road. So we're trying to avoid that by, in essence, piggybacking this ordinance to have you include this block. One of the concerns that we have that we mentioned at the last commission meeting and Tom just reiterated is the issue concerning setbacks. So I have Ronaldo Borges, our architect, here today to go over with you what our proposal is and how we think it will be in keeping with the other buildings between Drexel and Pennsylvania. So without taking up any more time, let me have Ronaldo come up and go through the process with regards to what we're proposing on the setbacks.
Good morning, Commissioners. Ronaldo Borges with Borges Architects at 999 Brickell. So the two primary exhibits that you have in front of you today illustrate the proposal from the Rosinella ownership of adding the additional massing on top of their second floor, creating a third and fourth floor, with setbacks that are reduced from the 75 that are required right now. The second exhibit shows you what happens if we were to work with a 75-foot setback, which basically is not a feasible solution. So the primary exhibit, sort of showing the, and I'm sorry, I'm not using boards, but this was, the boards were coming to my office when I was told to get over here this morning early. So we have a 8-foot setback from the second floor facade. The second floor is an existing floor that they've been using as a lounge and is now being converted, you know, to hotel use possibly. And then the third and fourth floor will be additional hotel floors. We also did the calculation of the FAR based on 2.5 FAR, and we're trying to utilize that FAR for this additional volume that you see. The drone photograph kind of shows you the context better because our adjacent property there on the west side is up to about four floors, and they have a zero setback along Lincoln Road. So I think based on our context, this proposed volumetric here is kind of sensible because it still kind of sets back. Oh, I have an extra one here for Daniel.
Okay. If anyone wants my copy.
Yeah.
For Cal.
So, you want this one? Again, the proposal would be to have an 8-foot setback for the new massing fronting Lincoln Road. And then the setbacks in the back are more relaxed, so there would be private terraces and all that on the north side of the proposed new hotel floors. And I think that is illustrated in the exhibits and so could answer any questions that you may have.
It says the one with the setbacks, and on the design it shows 8 feet, 8 feet, but underneath it says it's 21 feet 8 inches and 29 feet 8 inches setback. Is that the setback
right, so,
from Lincoln Road?
Yes, or? Commissioner. So the total setback of the third floor would be 21.8.
Oh, I see.
Right? So the incremental setback is 8 feet from the facade of the second floor, which is 13 feet 8 inches.
Okay.
Existing. So the gray massing okay. is the existing restaurant facility right now.
The bottom number is from Lincoln Road.
Thomas. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I think it looks good.
And again, the strategy here is to surgically do this without disrupting the restaurant, which is a very successful restaurant on Lincoln Road, and sort of try to do a light structure on top at the hotel use and set it back as proposed here.
Okay.
I'm not sure it's commercially viable to have so few hotel rooms.
Well, that's the analysis that they're doing now. The first idea was to sort of make sure that we could accomplish this.
Okay.
But it would be a small boutique hotel, you know, animating, you know, the liveliness of Lincoln Road. I think it's a very smart transition to try to bring this kind of life to Lincoln Road.
Thank you.
Does anyone have any more questions for Ronaldo or Wayne? If not, I'll take questions and comments from the public, and then I'm sure we have our own questions and comments. Okay.
Hi, Daniel Seraldo, Miami Design Preservation Lead. This is the first that I've been able to see it, and I'm trying to like process everything. But just going back to the original ordinance, I thought the idea was for larger sites that had depth to encourage some new development that would also retain a cultural component at the ground level, 500 square feet minimum, and also have a large setback. So we had months of meetings with the two other hotel proposers. We have not heard from this new property owner. We'd love to sit down and understand it better, but it just from looking at it, it looks like it's like 8 feet setback on the upper levels. because their lot isn't deep enough to even do the setback of the other ones. So it seems kind of like a very new proposal that we'd really have to study further. And I don't even know if they'll have space for the cultural, because the cultural component has to be on the retail ground level.
I don't think so.
It does.
Mm-hmm. I feel like they had to have a cultural component, which could be art, sculpture, something open to the public. I didn't know it had to be 500 feet, square feet.
Yeah,
it does.
Well,
it does.
Hang on. One of the things we talked about at our last meeting actually was to do away with their ability to just pay into art in public places, because that's what they'll do. They'll just stroke a check,
right,
and then we won't accomplish this. So we're mandating that they actually create space, which is the we have money for art. What we don't have is space. So what we're trying to do is incentivize hotel developers who want to open on Lincoln Road, don't just give us money for art in public places. What we want to see is you create space, whether it's for, you know, book readings, poetry readings, you know, jazz, whatever may happen. That's what we're lacking, and so we do want the actual space. I don't remember if it had to be on the ground floor or could it be the second.
It has to be on the retail, which we think is very important, because that will really help to reactivate. So we'd be happy to study it more and maybe with like a continuance and understand it better, but there are some details I think still have to be baked. But we also don't want to hold up the two big projects that, you know, it's been months of work that they've developed their project.
So are you speaking on, does MDPL endorse the other, the first part?
MDPL already endorsed the other part. The thing is that, as just to be clear for everyone, I can't take a position for MDPL unless the advocacy committee has reviewed it. So I'd love to bring this back to review. But
right. But has the advocacy committee seen the first part?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, many times.
They endorsed it.
And they endorsed it.
So, okay. I just want to understand. Yes. So we have the original ordinance that is here only because we're discussing setbacks potentially to expand to include the east portion. That would include that block. But no one's had a chance to fully process that and understand the setbacks and understand how that works, but we don't want to hold up necessarily the original ordinance that was approved at first reading. So we may want them traveling, you know, concurrently, separately, so we don't hold one up, but we can start working on the other and really see where we can find that, I guess, how to move it forward if we were to move it forward. I don't know. I'm just trying to understand. Is that what's happening? Is that where we're feeling we want to go?
So, Tom, question for you. Regarding the first piece, do we have an estimated range of the number of additional hotel units that are going to come from those two projects?
I think, and I'll let Mickey and Monica address that, but I think we're probably looking at a maximum of 150 to 200 with both projects combined.
Actually, I think they're each in the 140 range.
Okay, so
we're
about
looking 300. Under 300 with those two projects.
Between
and Mickey Marrero, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard.
Both combined is less than 300, you're saying?
Correct, correct.
That is significant.
Yeah, that's
which brings me
my other concern.
Well, that brings me to my original, when we had this at first reading, my only concern between first and second was to understand, the last thing I want to do is oversaturate.
Correct.
And make sure that whatever we do is an enhancement and is something that will be a positive impact and not have an unintended consequence, negative consequence, whereby we are looking at this in a vacuum and not how it interrelates to everything else. So I want to be cautious as we move forward, how we move forward and how we, you know, how many more rooms do we really need in the city?
No, I think that's a great point. And Bo Martinez, I want to rattle your cage a little bit on this as well, in relation to the Convention Center Hotel.
Right, that's what I thought.
Which is the city's hotel, right in this vicinity. Now, there's plenty of analysis, and while that's an 800-room hotel, that's still a small hotel for our Convention Center business portfolio and what we're trying to attract. This is very close proximity. So I also think for second reading, we need to be prepared to talk about the addition of 300 more rooms. Is that a good thing? Because we feel that our convention center hotel is still, you know, a little bit undersized to attract the types of conventions we were trying to get. you know, how do we feel about even more rooms potentially than 300 if we start expanding the blocks along Lincoln Road that are part of this hotel incentive? You know, what does that mean in relation to our convention center business?
And it might be important to know if they will do the room blocking for conventions, if it's that many rooms.
Because of the proximity.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing that we could add in, is that they have to be a part of our room blocking in order to get this incentive. I mean, can you please be prepared with a discussion for second reading about that?
Yes.
We would also need to talk to legal about that to see what we've never put that into an LDR before. Usually, that's done as part of a DA or a covenant. So we'd have to see whether or not we could even do that from a legal standpoint.
Okay, it's an interesting discussion.
Yeah. And we did do a very comprehensive. Bo's team put together a very comprehensive study on the potential impact of adding hotel units to Lincoln Road, and we concluded that it would have zero impact on the new convention headquarters hotel and would have no impact on the ability to have hotels otherwhere, in other areas of the city, that there wouldn't be that competition factor.
Yeah, you can absorb a lot more than 300 new hotel rooms on Lincoln Road and still have no adverse impact to the convention center hotel.
Okay. And did we meet with the convention center hotel developers and share those findings with them and that analysis? They're getting their financing now, so they're highly sensitive to these types of discussions by the city.
Okay.
How many, approximation, Wayne, how many rooms was the, Rosanella wanted to avail themselves of? Can you give me an approximate?
10 to 12.
Oh, that's little.
10 rooms?
10 to
total?
12 rooms, a boutique
Very
hotel.
Very boutique.
But I would like to point out a couple of things. One, you're going to need more hotel rooms in proximity to the convention center. There's no question. And your own studies have shown that. Two, we haven't yet determined whether or not the size of our rooms will avail ourselves of some of the language in the proposed ordinance, which is to have rooms 200 square feet or less. I think our rooms are going to be a little bit larger, and therefore we may not have to provide the cultural space, but if we have them smaller, we will provide the cultural space. So that's the way the ordinance is being proposed. And you know, we have a limited space. We have 5,200 square foot lot. We're not a 30,000 square foot lot. But because of the way the code is being interpreted, we don't want to demolish a building. You know, we don't want to disrupt the whole neighborhood just to be able to add a use that's already permitted under the code, and we're not seeking the 75 feet. This is just a way, to be honest with you, to fit a project into this proposed ordinance so we don't have to do demolition, which would be an economic waste. It's not to try to get around anything. It's not to circumvent the ordinance or anything like that. We already have the right. And all that this commission would be doing is, if we're not allowed to piggyback this ordinance, is forcing them to potentially demolish a building that doesn't need to be demolished.
Okay. Please.
I thought you had called the public.
Yes,
right?
I sure did.
Mm-mm.
Welcome.
I'm speaking for myself. And as a member of the HP board, which seems to be sloughed over in this whole conversation. First of all, when you all allowed this building, hotels behind the historic buildings on Lincoln Road, we knew this was going to happen. You had 75 feet. Everybody thought that was fine, even though some of us held our breath to see what was coming because we hadn't seen any plans. Preservation Board hadn't heard anything about it, and all of a sudden it's moving along, and now everybody was starting with Sigafredo, and I apologize profusely to Sigafredo for talking against this project. I've known them since they came to Lincoln Road, and they have a wonderful business going. But I don't blame them. They're trying to get in where everybody else is going to try to get in. What are you going to do when a smaller building comes and uses the same? And especially trying to demolish a historic building in order to build a hotel for 15 units? That I can't even imagine.
And obviously, they would have to come in front of the HPB to get that approval. So I can't imagine that they would get that approval.
How are they going to get that kind of approval?
Think about it.
Don't things ever come here that sound so absurd that you don't move them forward? Think about what.
If you give us a minute, I think that's what's about to happen. So.
That's what's about to happen. What,
I think we're going to bifurcate this.
No, we're going to.
Commissioners, that's what I'm reading here, is that we're going to bifurcate this discussion about the Eastern Bloc, give the administration heroic efforts trying to get, you know, these documents to us. And I know they came in, you worked late. They came in at 11:55 p.m., I saw this morning when I looked at it, and I sent it over to Mr. Mooney and to MDPL. However, nobody has had time really to chew on these and digest them. So I think what I would say is bifurcate it and give the community, give planning staff, give everyone a chance to really study this and digest it and understand what's recommended. Is that what you all want to do with this?
Would that have to be a separate referral so that
it... No, I think it was referred to land use, so I think you could keep it here if you want to continue this to, say, your October 30th land use. If at that point it looks like it's ready to go, it would have to go back to commission for referral to planning board and move along a separate track. Okay. But I don't think you'd need to re-refer it. I think it has been referred to land use, and it can continue on as a separate item.
Better.
So the separation you're talking about is to separate this item from what you did with two hotels. Is it only up to two yet?
Well, no, it's not two hotels. It's the area that is within what was approved at first reading.
Right. So what we're keeping here, just to be clear, is the extension of another block and the discussion about different setbacks for smaller frontage properties. So what everyone had a chance to look at and study, which was the other application involving Lincoln Center and the Sterling Building, that's going to have second reading on October 16th at the commission. This whole discussion about going further east and modifying sort of the rules for a smaller frontage building, looking at different setbacks, that's going to stay here because that gives everybody time to study it and see what they want to do with it.
Is that a result of the Segafredo suggestion, or is this something that somebody else has come in for?
This is Rosanella.
I'm sorry.
Rosanella.
Which, by the way, we love Rosanella. Just want to put that out there.
Rosanella is delicious. We should all eat there.
Delicious.
It's not really about the restaurant.
It's about looking at the ordinance. So we're separating that.
Okay. So this is going to be heard separately. We don't have to think about it for the other.
Right.
Okay.
You just have to think about it for the next month and then come back here.
And I think it's worthwhile to do something for Rosanella. Absolutely something. Well, they have a wonderful business. Three businesses right in the row.
Obviously, I want to hear what Mr. Mooney ends up saying, but from the analysis that Mr. Borges did, it certainly looks like some modification. I mean, the page... A004 with the 75-foot setback, and you have this tiny little jutting structure in the back, is probably not optimal, but I think everyone needs time to figure out whether they're comfortable with your proposal as is or they want to suggest modifications.
Yeah. And remember, and you know this, it's not just for one property. This would affect all similar type properties.
Exactly.
And so we want to make sure that we're really understanding the setbacks, we really understand the fuller picture of it, process it, digest it, and bring forward the best possible recommendations.
Maybe building up businesses like this should be given an extra look because they have been here forever, but not to give away the store, demolish historic buildings, and Wayne, I'm surprised.
Wouldn't be demolishing the whole building. It's just mostly the rear portion. The rear portion, not
okay,
the facade.
So I think you have a direction. It's by acclamation.
But
before you vote,
just make one comment. You know, we're trying to get on the commission agenda for what you're doing with the whole ordinance. You have a month almost to have Tom
review it. I'm happy to meet with MDPL again, Nancy, whoever, in that time period to see if we could come back to the commission then. If we can't, we can't. But it's the same group of commissioners that heard it on first reading. They're here today that will hear it again. We might be able to resolve this within those 3 to 4 weeks. This is not rocket science. It's only about this setback issue. We have limited space. The block is already designed. And what we're proposing is really not out of the ordinary. We're not asking for use. We're not asking for the height. It's really one issue. And I think we can resolve that issue or address it within the 4 weeks that we have.
Wait, let me ask something, because, I mean, I'm fully supportive of having a nine-room hotel here. Question I have is, just looking at the space itself, you're saying it is probably impossible, if not extremely difficult, to have a public space incorporated into this project?
Well, we would comply with the code if we have the rooms that are less than an average of 250 square feet, but we're thinking of having larger rooms. So we wouldn't have to provide the space the way the ordinance reads, but if we do, then we will have the space.
Personally, I think we need to understand it better, because it's not just the Rosanella space. We're expanding in a block. We need to understand from Mr. Mooney, what are the other properties that fall into the same condition? And for me, I think the creation of the cultural space is really important. I mean, the goal of this whole thing was to try to create those spaces, and we even did away with the AIPP contribution, because that's not – there's something intrinsically more valuable of having the cultural tenant on Lincoln Road and how that contributes. It's worth more than just the stroking of the check. Mm-hmm.
And
the
cultural requirement applies to not just if you're taking advantage of the unit size, but to the height.
Yeah, and I also think there's sort of a trust factor, too, with letting everyone really chew on this and understand it. And if it's good, it's good, and we'll all embrace it, you know.
Commissioner, Jeff Burkow, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. We represent the other two hotels and the original proposers. Look, nobody wants to stop Rosanella from having a hotel. But what we would like to assure is basically what we've assured all the stakeholders all along is that everybody gets to review this and that there will be process. There needs to be the same process for Rosanella and any other hotels that has occurred for the current hotels, meaning we went to the planning board. We went to the HPB, and the HPB looked at the setbacks. Mm-hmm. We were providing 65 and 75-foot setbacks, sure. Not 8-foot setbacks. Sure. We went to MDPL. We went to the bid. We went to the Flamingo Homeowners Association. Yep. We paid our fees for the application.
Listen.
Rosanella needs to do the same thing.
Yeah, I think we're all in agreement, and I know it could take a little bit longer, but it sounds like everyone is conceptually on board with you, but needs to dig in more. So I think we've got the direction. It's unchanged. We're going to bifurcate, bring this one back here next month. It's already been referred. Do we need to modify the title?
No. It was
because
referred.
It's really just for the eastbound extension.
Yeah, we can modify the title when it comes back on October 30th to make it clear that it's for the extension to Drexel Avenue.
Okay. And can we add this document that was handed out? Can we add this online so that anyone that's watching this back later has it as an attachment to this agenda? Is there a way to do that through the clerk's office, this document?
Sure.
Okay, can we do that? All right. Sorry. All right,
if
very
I may,
good.
Just before, Bo, where are you? You're hiding. Is Bo still here?
Yeah.
Oh. Bo, I think it's very important because for my own separate and aside, just on a macro level, I really need to sit down with you and understand, and I hope you sit down with each one of us and understand the number of hotel rooms that are coming online in the city of Miami Beach. We can divide it by areas, but at the end of the day, we're still one city. I need to understand the relations to that with the convention center, as we iterated before. And, you know, how much more can we really, you know, as a city, as we're moving forward, look at, handle, also whatever you can put together for us. I know we had an outside consultant already put forward some numbers, but I think we need a little more refinement on that.
I love that idea. Could you do, if you like this, a map? And could you delineate the projects, where they are, and how many new hotel rooms they're adding? It should be just a project, you know, looking up in the planning applications, where those projects
are. Knowing
what's
in the hopper, potentially.
Right. And maybe with timing, what, you know, expected, you know, when they would be coming online. That would be very helpful, I think for everybody.
I think it would be. And understanding that level of saturation and, mm-hmm. and what we want to be is, and this is going to curtail into some of your other items because, you know, the world is changing and brick and mortar retail is changing and a lot of things are happening. So it's going to be, I think, a great conversation. Thank you both.
Can you bring, how long would it take you to do that kind of a map? Could you bring that back for next month?
We can definitely work with the planning department and get a map by next month.
That would be nice to see.
And remember, there are areas in the city where we've incentivized specifically for hotel uses that may not have availed themselves of that. So we may want to have like two types of analysis of what could potentially be and what currently is in the hopper or close to coming in.
So let's look at that map in the context of this item, which is the continued.
Okay.
That would include hotel use that's coming on in Collins Park
citywide.
Area. In the area near the convention center, all of those.
From south to north, first 87th. Thanks.
Project.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. All right, we are going to go to Sunset Harbor, which is item 2. Yes? Discuss. That's the one you wanted? Okay. Discuss limiting big box formula retail and formula restaurants in Sunset Harbor. Vice Mayor Areola.
Yeah, this is going to be just like item number 3. Something we've...
We can combine them?
I don't know if we should combine them because they might be different outcomes. Same discussion. Maybe we can accelerate the second time we discuss this. But so I live in Sunset Harbor, full disclosure, and I tell you my view of it, and people can express theirs. Yeah, I love my neighborhood. I think it's extremely charming. I think one of the things that attracts particularly residents, it's become a really residential destination for all of Miami Beach residents, is just the unique retail experience, the unique charm of the neighborhood, the different restaurants, fitness centers, retail establishments that are not chain stores, that are not restaurants that you can find anywhere else in the city. And one of my fears is that Sunset Harbor might become what we've seen happen on Ocean Drive or Lincoln Road, which is a proliferation of, you know, chain stores, chain restaurants. Currently, Sunset Harbor, you know, for whatever reason, you know, we've had a number of stores close recently, and my fear is that we will have, you know, what were once, you know, local restaurants become fast food joints, and you know, I, for one, would like to keep the character of the neighborhood unique and try to, you know, preclude, you know, fast food type establishments from, or chain stores from opening up in Sunset Harbor, really to protect the character of the neighborhood and the current operators that we have there from having to compete with big national chains that, you know, eventually can change the entire character of the neighborhood if, you know, if we got Pizza Huts and Subways on every corner. Mm-hmm. So.
I agree. I remember some years ago, Home Depot was trying to move into Sunset Harbor.
Exactly.
Right. That would just be a disaster.
Yeah. And we fought it hard. We didn't want that type of number one, it's a traffic. Number two is something that we don't want. I do agree that our neighborhood is very charming and we have a lot of restaurants. But I can tell you, I disagree with certain things that you say because I know all the restaurants there. Blue Dahlia, I did sit down with the owner of Blue Dahlia. I went over the menu. I had people, I didn't go to the restaurant, but I had everybody who went to the restaurant I told her comment about the restaurant. Because she said, I'm a Mexican, up-class Mexican place. You need a market because you know what? I said, Tekistan is around the block. If you're going to serve salsa and chips, I mean, they serve salsa and chips a lot better than she did. I said, number one, your portion was small. Number two, the price was too expensive. She had like risotto, lobster risotto for $58 on a Mexican restaurant. I said, nobody's going to pay $58 for a lobster risotto. I told her that. I said, you know what? If this was a burger joint, we have burgers and beer, and everybody was standing outside in line. But the guy who took it over didn't know how to manage it. The service was terrible. It started going down because of the service and the food. They would sit you down and say, oh, we're going to take care of you in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
You get up and go.
I mean, there's a lot of issues.
That was a lot of issues. That's exactly what happened in some of the restaurants. Look at Sardinia. Sardinia has been there before everybody else. But he's smart because in the summer, he knows we all leave. He knows he gets less people. So on Mondays, sometimes he goes 50% off on all the price. and or he cut down the plate. He cut down the plate. Well, it hasn't happened this year because he's pretty successful this year, but he cuts down the plate in half. So if you want a full plate or a half plate, you're able to eat a great meal for half the price. So he has evolved very well, but I think we have too many specialty restaurants. So the problem is if you say, oh, my God, I do not want to eat Italian in Sunset Harbor, what are the options? You have Mexican, you have fish, the Stittsville.
Belly.
So it becomes like, oh, my God, I don't have that many choices. So we were thinking in the emails we were going back and forth. I remember Joe Allen. Joe Allen had a menu that you can go any time of the day and you can eat an appetizer or a hamburger or a pizza, or you can have a full dinner and a steak. It was all in the same menu, served all day. And that is something that is appealing to everybody because you can't go to one of the restaurants and get anything like that. The Moderna tried. The Moderna had a problem. They changed chefs 3 times, and they keep changing their stuff, and we loved it. We tried. They even gave us free food for every apartment in Sunset Harbor delivered. I ordered it. It was fantastic. I got my nice fish for my husband and I for 2 for free. It was great. They tried to promote it, but it didn't work. So it's they need to analyze. And one thing that I saw very nice the other day, these people, somehow we have to get the commercial restaurants to get together and market a little bit better on what they do. Because if you have something like this, it will be more marketable and stuff like that. Or I would agree to a Seasons 52, a Capital Grill, that they have an extensive menu that if you don't want to go to any of the other restaurants, you at least can go there.
Thank you. You have something to add?
I just want to say that
I'm sorry to interrupt, but your name?
Patrick Passanati. I'm the president of Sunset Harbor North. I've lived in the building for 20 years, so I've seen the neighborhood change from light industrial to a destination neighborhood as it is now. I'm here to represent the views of my residents in the building, many who I know through all these years, and basically we agree with what Ricky says. You know, we're not in favor of big chain restaurants coming in. There may be an exception to a Capital Grill or something that's kind of more open to everyone, a little bit more upscale. I don't know if we have restaurants currently with that footprint for those large spaces. Right now we have, I don't want to see it going into Subway or some of the fast food joints that we would be able to accommodate.
Okay, thank you.
So I've given this a lot of thought over a lot of years, and I've worked with professional staff. So we did something on Ocean Drive, and I'm happy to come and talk to our neighborhood about how we craft this carefully, because I agree. I mean, there's certain national chains that I would love for our neighborhood, and there's others that I think would be bad for our neighborhood. But on Ocean Drive, for example, you know, we really put a lot of effort into it, and I think, you know, we capped it at, you know, no more than we looked at the national list of top restaurants and retailers, and, you know, sort of made a cutoff so that certain types, some of the ones you mentioned, the Seasons 52, Capital Grill, those sorts, would be allowed, right? So we weren't so restrictive that we threw the baby out with the bathwater. But we certainly put ourselves in a position to avoid having, and I don't like naming names because it's unfair to those companies, but the, you know.
We know. We understand.
McDonald's or whatever. Pick a big one. And I love McDonald's, good company, but, you know, those kinds of establishments from coming onto Ocean Drive. And we could look at that for our neighborhood, come up with some good criteria that I think the neighborhood would find acceptable. Here's the other thing, folks, that really concerned me. As we know, a lot of the properties until recently were owned by friends of ours, you know, Scott Robbins, Philip Levine.
Yeah.
They're residents. They live here. And they went to great pains to, like, carefully select who the tenants were going to be, because they live here. They eat there. Their kids go there. That their properties have been sold now to a firm out of North Carolina. And when properties get flipped to institutional investors, those institutional investors only care about maximizing their rent. Oh, they don't care about local residents so much. And so right now, a lot of the property in our neighborhood is owned by folks from out of town. And they're going to look to maximize rent. And big chains are the ones who have the money. So I do think this is urgent, and I'd like to sit with our neighborhood, and I'll come in with the team, and we'll come up with some criteria that we could
we can be comfortable. So do you want to continue this then to next month, and you'll do that in the meantime?
Yeah.
Is 1 month?
Yeah, 1 month's fine.
I know there's an election going on. I don't know if anyone noticed that.
Yeah.
Do you want to come back in October?
No, we can come back in October, ma'am. Okay. My name's on this. And Tom, what I think we do, and I'll circulate it, let's pass the over the ordinance that we crafted for Ocean Drive. And we'll start.
Yeah,
start
and something to for you to think about is the cost of the rent. I mean, the same thing is happening in Lincoln Road. What happened to Lincoln Road? Lincoln Road, it happened and the rents got so high. I mean, that's why restaurants sometimes, we lose the restaurants in Sunset Harbor, because I think in order to actually pay for $30,000 a month rent, like Stillsville used to be, or the ones that were there before, you got to have lunch, dinner, and breakfast. Otherwise, to keep up with the rent. It's way there. They're so high that it makes them out of the thing. That's what happened in Lincoln Road. It becomes so crazy. That's why Joe Allen sold, and then the next person, we had four people come into that space until Stillsville, and, you know, that is something to think about. That's what's happening
so
to us.
I don't know if you know, we lost Pub Belly Noodle last week.
Yeah, I heard.
So that's Pub Belly Noodle, long-time tenant, and La Moderna, my favorite restaurant, closed. So this isn't...
Well, the owners of Pub Belly...
I know, but...
got out.
Yeah, but whatever. I mean, the problem is it's a snowball effect, right?
Well, you know, when he opened up Pub Belly Sushi became so popular that people did not go to Pub Belly Noodle.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what happened. And another thing, it needs to be having an analysis of what we have there. We have no Chinese restaurants, no Cuban restaurant. We only have...
Cuban restaurant would be great.
Well, Cuban restaurant would be great. A Chinese
restaurant.
A dim sum restaurant, you know, like the one in Miami would be fantastic.
Thank you both.
By the way, that's why we have an economic developer to help us go recruit some of these guys.
And I'm willing to work with the commercial and have meetings with, you know, the neighborhood association to improve and for us to promote it, because we can promote it in the building. But you also have to remember, we all leave.
Let me bring this in, because Vice Mayor Ariel is going to come to your neighborhood, and you guys are going to talk about all that, and it's going to be amazing. In the meantime, I'm going to have Commissioner Steinberg
open up a joint venture.
Commissioner Steinberg has some questions.
No, well, yeah. So I just, when you're crafting this on a macro level, right, and you touched on some of the things you'd like to see there, you know, as we move forward, and we just talked about the fact that brick and mortar is changing, and, you know, with retail specifically, most people are shopping online, and there's a lot of things that are changing and are happening there. And so how do we start looking at what the future trends will be? What do we want those vacant stores to actually inhabit? Like, traditionally, we used to think some sort of retail, and I don't know that that's where, maybe we need to change our entire way of thinking and understanding of what should be going in the brick and mortar, so they're not vacant. And so what scope of services do people still need to go to in person? You know, because yes, we have a tourist economy, but we have a lot of residents as well. And those residents, if they're not going online, what would bring them to patrons? I mean, certain place, dry cleaner you have to go to. Until one day you may be able to do it on an app. I don't know.
They deliver and pick up now.
But when you're doing this, we need to start thinking, I think, a little differently.
Yeah. All right.
So by acclamation, we're going to continue it to October 30th, mm-hmm. and then for the October 30th meeting, we'll include in the package copies of existing formula retail regulations we have for Ocean Drive, Ocean Terrace, Lincoln Road.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
We have to move quickly.
So, okay.
And
so
Ricky, let me know when you want to have a meeting and then schedule, because we're going beyond October now, because we're going to have the nominees come in, and then I can schedule a meeting, and everybody will be back in October, the end of October.
Thank you. You all can sort that out. We're going to do, just because it's basically the same discussion, we're going to do item 3, which is discuss limiting big box formula retail and formula restaurants on Lincoln Road. Maybe we don't need to repeat the same discussion, but decide how we want to move this item forward.
Yeah, I mean, more or less the same discussion. I think we've all expressed nostalgia for how Lincoln Road used to be 20 years ago to what it's become today, and how do we, you know, create some incentives. We did this earlier today with the hotel legislation, but how do we, you know, help Lincoln Road regain some of the character it once had, that it was a unique asset to Miami Beach, that if you wanted to go to certain places anywhere in the country, you had to come to Lincoln Road to experience these restaurants and retail establishments. But over the last 20 years, it's largely become a mall just like any other mall you could find elsewhere in the country. And so how do we help our, you know, very unique asset, Lincoln Road, regain some of its uniqueness, especially in light of the very significant investment we're about to make to renovate the street?
Yeah, yep. I mean, we have very responsible property owners, for example, like a Lyle Stern, who's making rent concessions and going above and beyond to try to attract the, you know, boutique types of tenants that are very interesting and, you know, making great efforts to save, for example, Fritz's Skate Shop, and I'm struggling to remember the name of the new restaurant that's coming in above where Art Center of South Florida was. But yeah, we also have, you know, corporate property owners that are not doing those things. So it is a complex question. So what would you like to do with this item?
We can ask the Lincoln Road bid. I don't see anybody here from the Lincoln Road bid to come in and talk. I've talked to a lot of these folks, but, you know, in partnership with our planning department and our economic development department, come up with a plan here. And I think because we're about to make a very significant investment in Lincoln Road, the time is ripe for us to talk to the property owners and say, look, these are the things that we want to see from you, the sort of behaviors, if we're going to make this investment. Mm-hmm.
Commissioner?
Yeah, you need to talk to them because at the end of the day, these landlords need to be part of the solution. We can only do so much, but
right.
they need to come to the table. And that's not just for Lincoln Road. That's citywide.
Is it reasonable? Could we have the bid come to be a part of this discussion next
we
month?
We could reach out to the bid, maybe meet with them beforehand, and then certainly ask them to come to the meeting if they're available on October 30th, if you want to continue it to that date.
See if you have any ideas. Yep, that sounds good.
So I have an idea about Lincoln Road that you guys were just talking about. How about the idea, you know how timeout is, that you go in timeout, you have many restaurants? How about a place in Lincoln Road or a couple of places in Lincoln Road, the small retailers that have specialty shops that they cannot afford a whole place because it's too expensive, have a couple of fronts inside of one building, and they're able to promote their products. Even though their products will have inventory there more or less in the back, that might be a good idea that they might be able to afford multiple tenants in a single building because they can't afford a single building because of the rent. Mm-hmm. And that might keep some of those nice, cute stores that are small that might end up working out, and then you just go in and go to the different places there.
It's like the Lincoln Eatery of retail.
Well, I'm thinking it that way, so you can imagine. But it might work with a tenant, and might work with the person who wants to have the face in front there and be there without having to pay tons of money.
Thank you. All right. So by acclamation, and continue to open and continue to next month.
Are we done?
We are not done. Yep. Good try. No, we are going to item 4. Which is the discussion regarding the establishment of penalties for property owners engaging in demolition by neglect.
This is a good one.
And this is, again, you've been very busy, Vice Mayor Areola. This is your item.
I think we all want to co-sponsor this. I think we've all expressed disdain on this issue, which is one particular property in North Beach where we're very concerned about the state of, you know, a landmark hotel, as well as the impact on the neighborhood that its closing has had. So the question becomes, what can we currently do, and what more can we do to disincentivize property owners from putting themselves in a position where it's demolition by neglect, and we start losing buildings that we really want to preserve, that add to the charm and character of the neighborhood, as well as serve as economic engines. I'm not sure who's going to present on this. We have a range of tools at our disposal, but what might more do we want to do to further prevent this type of behavior?
We've discussed this internally, both at our briefings and with the building official and with the city attorney's office, and we do have some limited tools in terms of fines. We also have a demolition by neglect portion or section of Article 10 of the Historic Preservation Regulations, which we have actually engaged for the first time for the Deauville. It's currently pending in circuit court.
to try to compel the owners to do the necessary repairs. It's the last time that we met and discussed this internally, we determined that we need to take a closer look at how we might be able to modify the fines, because the problem with just increasing the fines in a broad stroke is that while it may impact a larger property, it might also have a consequential effect on a smaller property. And so the fines that you might be imposing on a larger corporate property are probably not what you want to impose on a smaller property who might actually be trying to do the right thing. So we're trying to find a way to come up with some recommendations so that those fines are proportional. And we can certainly come back to you with that research as well as any other suggestions.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, because it's highly frustrating when it's a deep pockets owner who certainly has the financial wherewithal on a real one of our gems, like a property that we would consider very special. And we've talked about those gems when we talked with the Urban Land Institute, and so it's highly frustrating, and we want to take action. And I agree with that. And we do need to be careful of that there are not every owner is a deep pockets owner, and some small property owners may be just getting by, and we wouldn't want to necessarily cause them to be on the losing end of that and lose their property. So I'm interested in hearing maybe what we can do creatively to think about. We can't be discriminatory, obviously, but maybe there's something to do with, I don't know what, the size of the property, or I don't know.
Narinder, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yes.
This is Narinder Singh from the Building Department.
Narinder Singh, Deputy Director, Building Department, on behalf of Building Official Ana Salguero. Building official has been looking at a few avenues as far as vacant property registration program. Is like a fee that they will have to pay, annual fee for registering the property. Yes. And it will be like a registration they can do either with a planning department or code compliance, where a failure to comply will have a fines, annual fines on a building that's larger than three stories in height. She's recommending.
She's recommending fining if it's over three.
Well, if it's more than three stories, so it's not one of these little.
Right.
It's a registry program. We did this in Fort Lauderdale as well. And so, you know, if the it's vacant, they come in, they register as vacant, and then they have to comply, you know, with certain requirements and pay a fee. So there's a penalty for staying vacant. So it's hopefully incentivized doing something.
This type of program has been used in Wilmington in Delaware State, where they have been finding the property since 2003.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. Could Commissioner Arreola, if you're intrigued by that, maybe they can come up with something.
Write it up.
And bring it to us to vet and see and understand the fine schedule and how that works?
Yeah. I want something that works, right? I think we all want something that works, and whether it's in our local community or just throughout the nation, other communities have to grapple with this, where you've got these iconic properties that, for whatever reason, you know, fall into neglect and are in danger of being lost. What have those communities done to save those properties?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't want to interrupt if you Hi, yes, Daniel Serralda, Miami Design Preservation League. So as there are more and more buildings under preservation ordinance, I think Debbie Tackett mentioned about 2,600 are under districts at the last HPB. It's increasingly harder to monitor buildings, especially, you know, it's like 7.5 square miles, and there's a good amount that's under this preservation overlay. And one question that, or one recommendation I would have is, currently the process for an unsafe structure is, from what I understand, is a building official files with the county and notifies the chief of preservation. But there isn't like a list of the unsafe structures that's like posted somewhere other than the county. And the county is not as good at sharing their reports as the city is. So would it be possible for us to have, like, on the website for the city to put a list so that, you know, it's just like a publicly available list, and then we can know. Because we used to, at the HPB, they used to every month have a report of unsafe structures, and then, you know, as HPB members change, sometimes it's, so it hasn't been on the agenda for a couple years. And then we get situations like some hotels that we're referring to where we kind of find out a little later than sooner, and mm-hmm. I think that would help if there was more transparency. Then we could, you know, I actually take a daily ride through the major parts of the district just to, like, check on certain buildings. But obviously it would be more helpful if we had, like, something public.
Yeah.
And then the different neighborhoods could kind of start to, you know, almost like a community watch, that they'd be aware of, maybe talk to the owners, how can we help you, so that it doesn't get to that situation that we're in now.
I love that.
Can we... It sounds like the details need to be sorted. Perhaps we could do a referral here to the HPB, have you sort of document what you think is the best way to go about that and what that process is, would be, and where it would be on the city's website or whatever, and present that to the HPB for feedback. And if they endorse it, then it could go on, you know, just a
page
back to commission
for all properties, not just historic.
No, I think it's historic properties really that we're concerned with, not all properties.
There are different remedies, you know. If it's a historic property or what we view as we've been calling certain gems in our city, I think those are the ones that we're grappling with, because we don't want to have to lose those versus some newer construction. I think there's a distinction between the two.
It also might serve. It really might serve as an inventory of potential, like, you know, if somebody was coming wanting to invest in historic properties in Miami Beach, you know, and then they would have this inventory of properties that they could go look at, because that's probably an inventory of people that are really struggling with their property, struggling to keep it, you know, can't figure out how to put the finances together to make those investments. So it actually might help attract, you know, new investors that want to bring those properties up to code, make them resilient, invest in them, and protect them for the future. So that, I like that as an added benefit.
I think there are many benefits to having it.
Yeah. So does that work, Tom, as a referral to HPB? And you'll come up with some sort of a draft of what that would look like. They can modify it, bless it, and can go back to commission. Okay. By acclamation. Okay, good idea. Yeah.
I'm sorry that we continue to struggle. Being on the HP board, the property up in North Beach, I don't want to call it by the wrong name again, so.
The Deauville.
The Deauville. I've been away for 3 months. I forget everything. So I don't understand why the city doesn't have a stronger hand in getting the attention of people. I don't think what we're doing now, I'd like to ask the lawyer, where are we now with the Deauville?
We're in the middle of litigation with them. So the city of Miami Beach actually sued the owner. So short of there, I can't conceive of any other circumstance where the city of Miami Beach has inserted itself regarding the conduct of a private property owner other than if initiating a lawsuit.
Yes, I think the lawsuit is fine, but that can go on for years as the property becomes a worse problem. It is a big problem to go by there and see the broken windows, people throwing things. I don't even know if they've covered the windows. They have done nothing. I think that they're just laughing at the fact that we're trying so hard, and they're not doing anything. Years and years ago, when this city wasn't as tame, I guess tame is a good word, they send people to jail who had properties that were abusing the neighborhoods. I don't think that we, this time of our lives, can do such a thing, but it shows that they got action by doing something stronger than just waiting for something to happen. Do they have somebody there making sure that the people aren't getting in the windows and breaking down the doors. I think that's still going on.
It's been a constant battle. I don't know. The city is suing the owner. I know that the mayor has personally met with the property owners mm-hmm. in his office. So, I mean, the management of code enforcement and criminal activity, that's a constant thing that's going on. That's not, you know, that's going to keep coming up throughout this that the city has to continue to manage. So, let's bring it back though, Vice Mayor, to the discussion about establishing penalties. Where do you want to go with that?
I hadn't thought about, you know, how penalties disproportionately impact, you know, smaller properties where then we're creating the opposite incentive that we want, where it's cheaper to actually let the building go than pay the penalties. But, you know, I would like to just further explore the expansion of our toolbox so that we can bring people into compliance and create the right incentives and disincentives so that we avoid situations like this one. Then, you know, I would direct staff, you know, whether it's the Fort Lauderdale example that the Susie mentioned, or just looking nationally at other municipalities that have had to deal with this, and then bring back some recommendations.
But let's do that. And I want to add to, I have an item in front of your finance committee, Vice Mayor, that is related in a way, because what can happen with these fines is they just stack up on the property, and they don't get paid, and they don't really cause any further action or investment in the property. They just accumulate. We have that condition now in the single-family homes, and this was brought to my attention by the Alton Road Homeowners Association, where there's a single-family home that actually had a fire, and it's burnt out, and there's no windows. And it's been in that condition for several decades. It has 25 years of code violations, fines, and the fines have accumulated to more than $2 million, which is more than the property is worth at this point. And so it just sits in that same condition, continuing to accumulate fines. But because our fines exceed the value of the property, plus whatever other, you know, financial constraints, liens, mortgage, whatever is on that property, nothing's ever going to be done. It's just going to sit there and be a blight on that block and an anchor on the property values of the neighboring single family homes. And that I have that referral in front of finance. It's deferred. I don't know why it's deferred month after month at finance. So I would ask you as the chair to pull it off the deferred list, and actually let's have a discussion. At some point, the city needs to engage. Certainly, it has to be looked at case by case. But if it's even a break even, we should take action, because then it releases not just that property, but it sort of also, you know, releases the other surrounding single family homes and the ones across the street. So I'd like to see that one. And I bring that up because it's kind of related to this discussion about just continuing to throw fines and penalties on one of these properties. There has to be something else, you know, that we can do. I don't know what it is.
Can the city condemn or by filing a suit against, is that the same? Can't the property be condemned for so many reasons? I worry that one of these days it's going to be a big fire. That's not an old thing in Miami Beach, that we have big fires for buildings we don't like. No, the buildings that just don't take care of themselves and don't care about the city. It's more about not caring about their neighborhood and the city. So condemnation is not something that moves the
it's an unsafe structure, which is within the purview of the building official identifying that it is an unsafe structure. But then about demolition.
That's right.
I think, the opposite of what the will of the commission is regarding these.
For this item that's in front of this committee today, that's the opposite of what we want. We're not looking to demolish these historic structures. For the other item that's at finance,
That one has to do.
That's different, and right. And I think it depends. But in the case of a burnt out single family home, I think an empty green lot would be
right
better for the neighborhood.
It would be appropriate where we would initiate unsafe structure proceedings, and then of course the ones in finance I'm familiar with as well, and that really pertains to the penalties gotten to such a point whether or not we are initiate foreclosure proceedings on our monetary fines,
right.
And again we have to do a really a case-by-case analysis because sometimes these properties are so mortgaged that we are never going to be able to extinguish that. Even if we take possession of the property, we turn around and sell it, our monetary fines or any sale would then go to pay the primary money mortgage, and the city of Miami Beach will never see the fines. And maybe that's an avenue we want to take.
But maybe that's okay. I think that's why I want the discussion at finance, because I want us to sure. figure out how to write that formula.
Absolutely.
Because even if, I mean, certainly if we just break even on the thing, it's worth doing. Right.
And, the concept is the eyesore is essentially removed. There's now a structure that is nothing but green. We had that with one of the properties that we actually seized as legal conduct, and it got demolished. It yep. took years, but we did actually get it done.
Okay.
Something in the middle of demolition just because they say it's unsafe. Unsafe things can be fixed. So why does that signal, okay, it's let's just go get rid of it because it's not worth it.
Okay.
There's got to be something in the middle. I don't know that all cities struggle like we do. Some cities get a lot tougher.
You have something to say?
No, yeah.
Wrap this up.
We need to be tough on this,
yep,
and
do.
I think we're going to send a strong message. We're not playing around here. But with that, I'm going to wrap it up and just say, I think one way, Susie, when you're looking at the fines and the concerns that Commissioner Aleman and Ariella brought up about it not having that unintended consequence on the smaller, I think if we look at, because I mean, the elephant in the room is the Deauville, right? I mean, that's a huge commercial property. That is not a small little mom-and-pop-owned building. That is a huge commercial, and that actual establishment being in the disarray that it is today has caused blight in an area. It's not just it affects just the immediate, you know,
right.
grounds. Mm-hmm. It affects an entire raft of blocks because that vibrancy has hurt North Beach. The restaurants and the retail and everything across the street for two blocks are feeling that void. So I think when we look at structuring it, there needs to be that criteria of the impact. If that particular establishment is going to have such a negative impact on the surrounding areas, we need to do everything in the toolbox and add more tools to that toolbox, right? And I think that's how you prevent it from being those smaller, mm-hmm. you know, you basically separate out levels of how you do this. And for something like this, I think you need to.
Do you have enough to bring this back next month with yes. additional discussion?
Yes. Just to confirm, what we're going to bring back is the following. Recommendations on proportional fines and the building registration, which would have also proportional annual fees associated with it. And two, we're going to come up with a mechanism to post unsafe structures in historic districts on the city's website. There is an HPB meeting on October 8th, mm-hmm. so we're going to try to get that to HPB for their comments on October 8th.
Okay.
So we'll have their recommendation for you before
Terrific.
Or at your October 30th meeting.
Terrific.
And the last thing we may want to explore, and you brought it up at one of our meetings, is do we want to take away certain privileges that they can avail themselves of now if they're not going to be a good actor. So something
well,
to think
I mean,
about.
That is, right. So some sort of down zoning limitation of use that the longer time goes on that you don't take care of the property will start chipping away at your.
And again, for the larger commercial establishments that have
right.
such a negative impact on the surrounding area by the manner in which they conduct themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Bo Martinez.
There needs to be a distinction.
Excuse me,
Hold on one second, please. For your hotel map, I don't know if this is the only hotel that's gone offline, but that should also be included. You're doing the ads, but you also need to do the minuses.
Okay.
And the Deauville, I know, is 500 rooms that went offline.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll definitely include that.
I just like to, I forgot what to say. I'd just like to add that when you do this, maybe is there something the fire department can do to do a fire watch on it? I just think one day we're going to wake up and say, oh,
there is a fire
look
watch.
What we didn't do.
There is a fire there is watch.
A fire and a police watch. They go by there.
Both they go by. But
no, I mean, they go in
there.
They check, they do what they can to.
Okay.
What do you mean? What is
there are
that...
people who are living in there.
Oh, yes.
Who are, that's where the fires come from. The building is not just going to blow up in flames. It's
that's
people
that's outside, I think, of the discussion of what we're doing today at land use.
But if it doesn't get inside, nothing is going to change. We're going to come back.
This is on their radar screen. I mean, police and fire are in full awareness and action regarding what's happening.
They are doing visits. They are going in. They are doing, yes.
Okay, we're going to move on to item one. You see how crafty I was, Commissioner Malenkoff? I value your input so much, I made you stay here the entire meeting by putting your item last.
So glad I was number one.
You are number one in our books. Proposed ordinance amendment to expand the allowable types of accessory uses within bayfront apartment buildings in the RM2 district, Commissioner Malenkoff.
Okay. This type of use is similar to what is allowed today. I'm not sure this has to, Tom, this does have to be added because it says that it can have massage services, solarium, sauna, exercise studio, health club, or massage service for use by residents or open to the public. That is already allowable, right?
Correct.
And this person wants to open an office that provides facials, massage services, wellness, beauty, things like that?
Correct.
So does it have to be, do we need to do an update?
Yes. We have an ordinance that's been drafted. It was referred, it was a dual referral by the City Commission to both the Planning Board and to the Land Use Committee. It's on the Planning Board agenda for next Tuesday. And it basically creates an allowance for additional accessory uses applicable to bayfront apartment buildings in the RM2 district within the West Avenue bayfront overlay. So it will have a very limited application, and it would allow for non-medical offices, which would be things like professional offices, accountants' offices, lawyers, real estate, and personal service uses. So this would, assuming it's transmitted by the Planning Board next Tuesday, it would be coming to the City Commission for first reading on October 16th. And then if approved at first reading on October 16th, adoption would be scheduled for October 30th.
Okay. I was particularly interested in the personal services, not particularly for accountants or lawyers, but I see no objection because you have a single lawyer or a single accountant. I think that's useful to have in an apartment building. So helps to reduce the traffic.
Yeah, it's not intense, yeah. Right? So.
And that's it.
Okay. Anyone from the public here to speak on this item?
Good morning. My name is Liam Cray. I'm here with Siegfried Rivera representing Capri South Beach Condominium Association. We were here earlier in the year in July during the commission meeting. In which we just articulated the position of the association that we just wanted to be sure that the amendment did not include medical office uses. But from my understanding, it sounds
sorry,
like it does
medical
not.
Office.
Medical offices.
Okay, it does not.
Okay. Then we have no issue with the amendment. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming.
I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Members?
Yeah. Tom, we had spoken about maybe a definition of personal services so that it's clarified. What happened with that?
That we have a definition of personal services in the LDRs that's applicable, and it's in Chapter 114, it's applicable to personal services associated with ALFs. For purposes of this, since it wasn't part of the referral, that would need to be a separate referral. We've always defined personal services as services such as barbershops, hair salons, nails, massage therapists. Things of that nature. So we would continue to apply that in this particular instance, and we don't see any conflicts with what they're proposing within this space.
Yeah, I would just say as separately as a referral to planning a definition. That way we never have ambiguity in the future.
Okay. Okay. Any issue with that? By acclamation?
So by acclamation, you're going to be doing two things. One, recommending approval of this as drafted.
Yes.
And two, recommending that the commission do a separate referral to the planning board. It'll be a C4 item that would create a definition for personal service establishments related to accessory uses.
Perfect. Perfect. Okay. Before we adjourn, we have an important announcement from Assistant City Manager Torriente.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to take just a few minutes to recognize our planning team that have just been recognized for an award that they are going to share, really, I think, with this committee and the commission, because it's the Gold Coast section of the Florida chapter of the American Planning Association is recognizing our planning department for the Town Center Central Core District. And it's been selected as the 2019 Planning Award winner in the category of Best Practice. So thanks to the planners and this committee, of course, because that was a labor of love, wasn't it?
That was a total labor of love, and I felt like one of the only times I've seen us create really enough space for the planning department to do their thing, to bring all of their creative ideas and thoughtfulness. I mean, the delineation of the Class A, B, and C streets and how each one should work and what it should include, the Paseo, all of it really was wonderful and came from the planning department.
I couldn't
so
agree
more. So we let them actually plan, and so no wonder they won a prestigious award. Congratulations. Kudos, Mr. Mooney, and to your entire staff.
Thank you, and it really is my staff that did the work. I'm up here taking the credit for it, but all of my staff, and they know who they are, they put a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of research into it, so they're the ones that deserve all the credit for that.
They do. Let's say all of their names right now on the record.
Carmen Sanchez, Rahelia Madan, Alejandro Garavito, Michael Belush, Frank Arbelez, who just recently left the city to take a position with the county. We tried to keep him, but we couldn't. Those were the main folks who put in the lion's share of the work.
Well, we appreciate them so much, and while we're tickled, we're not surprised that they have won this excellent award. All right.
That's great. I agree, and I think using the Dover Cole master plan and making it into a reality is not easy, and I think that they did a fabulous job. It's you know, it's one thing to just take a street and try to envision it, but you have to follow what the residents wanted. I mean, that's part of it. So I think it makes it more interesting to work on, but it gives you certain limitations that you're working from. It's not like you have a blank slate, and they really did a great job.
It may already be in the works, but can we ask for a press release on that award?
I found out on the drive here, so we'll work on an LTC and a press release.
Perfect, perfect. All right, very good. Meeting adjourned in less than 2 hours.
Good.